Good evening, good evening. Thank you so much for joining me. This is the podcast, The Endurance of Labor Laws. I'm your lovely host, Leslie Sullivan, and today is episode 266, and this one's going to be kind of short and sweet. There's not a lot of information about what we are going to discuss, and in this episode, the main topic is going to be high-level waste. So in the previous episode, we talked about low-level waste. In this episode, we're going to talk about high-level waste. So let's take a look at this puppy here, and then we will do a little bit of housekeeping afterwards. So high-level waste can sometimes be termed as final waste. It kind of varies depending on the country and how they describe it. So it is generally accepted that the final waste, basically high-level waste at the end of all that phase, will be disposed of in a deep geological repository. And many countries have developed plans for such a site, including Finland, France, Japan, United States, and Sweden. Now it says here, high-level waste is the highly radioactive waste material resulting from the reprocessing of spent nuclear fuel, including liquid waste produced directly in reprocessing, and any solid material derived from such liquid waste that contains fission products in sufficient concentrations, and other highly radioactive material that is determined to be consistent with existing law to require permanent isolation. So this is waste that has to be isolated. It's not something that can go to like a landfill. It cannot be picked up by the city dump. And this is one reason why we have Superfund sites that should have never become Superfund sites. So, for example, when people dispose of things improperly, like, for example, they have the city dump come pick things up, that's when some of our city dumps become basically radioactive, and they become nuclear toxic waste sites because people sometimes stupidly or ignorantly dump things just in their trash. And this might be an individual, it might be a company, whatever the case may be, but you have to dispose of certain things in a responsible manner. You should dispose of everything in a responsible manner, but especially things that can be very toxic to you, to other people, and to the environment. In regards to spent, which means used, reactor fuel, spent reactor nuclear fuel is used reactor fuel that is no longer efficient in creating electricity because its fission process has slowed due to buildup of reaction poisons. However, it is still thermally hot, highly radioactive, and potentially harmful. So this is nothing new. We have a lot of this down to science, and so it's not really a big issue. When it does become a big issue is when someone doesn't do their job and they don't do it well and things fall through the cracks. So you need to make sure we do things right. In terms of waste materials from reprocessing, materials for nuclear weapons are acquired by reprocessing spent nuclear fuel from what are called breeder reactors. I'm not really sure what that is. Sounds interesting. Reprocessing is a method of chemically treating spent fuel to separate out uranium and plutonium. Oh, now I understand what that somewhat of that previous term meant. The byproduct of reprocessing is a highly radioactive sludge residue. So very interesting there. And I want to look up the exact definition of a breeder reactor. Let me see. I want to make sure I'm not... Okay. It says, a breeder reactor is a nuclear reactor which creates, I think it's fissile or fissile material, typically plutonium-239 by, I think it's irradiation, if I'm pronounced that correctly, of uranium-238 at a faster rate than it uses another fissile material. Typically, uranium-235 is fuel. My apologies for mispronouncing some of these words, but it's not my specialty, obviously so. But moving on with this topic, in terms of the disposal for the high-level waste, it says high-level radioactive waste is stored for 10 to 20 years in spent fuel pools and then put in dry cast storage facilities. In 1997, in the 20 countries which account for most of the world's nuclear power generation, spent fuel storage capacity at the reactors was 148,000 tons, with 59% of this utilized. Away from reactor storage capacity was 78,000 tons, with 44% utilized. So that sounds like a lot, but it's actually not. If you think about what all they use it for and how they store it, it sounds like a lot, but it's not as much as you think. So don't be intimidated by those words or figures there. Now, I do want to do a little bit of housekeeping here. So I looked up low-level waste and how it is disposed of, and the companies that handle that. There technically are 4 active licensed low-level waste disposal facilities that are located in the United States. The first one is U.S. Ecology, and that one is located in Richland, Washington. The second one is Energy Solutions Clive Operations. That's located in Clive, Utah. The third one is Energy Solutions Barnwell Operations. And that's located in Barnwell, South Carolina. And the fourth one is Waste Control Specialist LLC, and that's located in Andrews, Texas. So it is important that these things be stored correctly and efficiently, because if they're not, that poses a really large risk. It's no different than if you don't dispose of just normal things properly. Like, for example, if we didn't have a city landfill, you know, say, for example, no one ever came by to pick up your trash. Everything's just thrown out the window. And let's say we didn't have, you know, sewer lines. Back in the day in Europe and other civilizations, before there was indoor plumbing, people just typically threw their trash and sewage right out the window. So whenever you were walking in and out of your house, you would be walking in pretty much anything and everything that is absolutely disgusting and gross and very highly contaminated with bacteria and viruses and just really bad stuff. So not a good thing to not be prepared. But what's interesting is that, you know, in regards to sewers and things like that, you know, having a good sewer system is nothing new. This goes back to the Romans. You know, the Romans, you know, as a aggressive empire as they were, I'm not a fan of their brutality, but in terms of their architecture and their technology in regards to water, trash, and sewer, they did a pretty good job. Now, here's the thing. Because Rome and other, I would say, cities and metropolises within the Roman Empire, a lot of their cities, whenever there was a epidemic, like, for example, I think every spring, excuse me, have hiccups a little bit. Man, goodness, excuse me. Pretty much every spring, there would be an outbreak of the bubonic plague. It was seasonal. And what's interesting is that the cities were hit worse in terms of death and disease because it was more populated. You know, the people in the country, they did not experience disease at that high of a rate because they didn't basically live on top of each other. They were spread out. Now, mind you, many people that lived out in the country of the Roman Empire were slaves for the Roman Empire or the Roman Emperor, whatever the case may be, or people that owned land out there, like, for example, senators and things like that, government officials way back in the day. So what's interesting is that the people that typically were not rich and that did not live in the cities, they typically lived longer because they were not exposed to as many viruses and bacteria. Now, mind you, they lived in an area that was probably very agrarian. It was probably very difficult, hard labor. And I think there was a slavery or slave revolt a couple times, an uprising that occurred. And, you know, needless to say, the Roman Empire had to squash them in order to keep them under control. And what's interesting is that, you know, there were some slaves that were released by their owners and some were not. So slavery, I'm not a fan of it, but if you have this opinion, and this is off topic, but if you have the opinion that all slavery was terrible, they were all hateful, evil people that had slaves, that's not true. There were some people that, yes, they were participating in slavery, but that was the cultural norm. That was society in general. There actually were slave owners that treated their slaves like their own family. They ate with their family. They provided for them. If they got sick, they had a doctor come and see them and treat them and cure them and heal them, whatever the case may be. And other times, there were some slave owners that they would actually free their slaves after a certain amount of time. So it's one of those things that you can't put everything or everyone in the same melting pot. You can't shame and blame just all across the board. So needless to say, for those that claim that, you know, for example, that white people are horribly racist, I'm like, I got news for you. Actually, some of the most racist people I have met over the years have been Middle Eastern, and even worse than that, the most racist people I have met have been African American. They're not always from Africa, like they may be Jamaican or something, but, you know, for the most part, Jamaicans are really nice people. At least the ones I've met. I've met blacks from Kenya, Jamaica, and there was a third country. I'm trying to remember which one it was. Anyway, the most racist people I have ever met in my life are blacks that live here in the United States that are typically Democrat, that like to play their violin and just complain about every little thing and blame white people that they don't even know, have never interacted with, have never even met them, but they blame them for all their problems. That makes absolutely, positively no sense whatsoever. And it gets old. And here's another thing. I've said this before. You know, if you and I were to meet, you would think, oh, she's a white chick. Here's the thing. I'm not actually white. My skin is very fair when I'm not tanning, but I'm actually a mix of several different races. And I already knew that. But I was like, you know what? I want to get that 23andMe test done. If you haven't done that, you need to get one. They are really cool. I found out I am a mix of a mix. My goodness, I have so much different national heritage and so many different ancestors. It's so cool. It's so cool and enriching. Like, I knew that I was English, Irish, French, and there's a fourth one. I'm trying to remember which one it was. But I found out through 23andMe that I'm actually Egyptian, I think, either Nigerian or Algerian. I'm trying to remember which one it is. I need to look at my test again. And then there's another one I found out that I am. I'm trying to remember what it was. I used to know all of them when I was talking about previously. But my point is this. You cannot judge someone by the color of their skin. That's my point. Because when you start to judge people by the color of their skin, that makes you the racist, not the person you're shaming and blaming. So just FYI, be aware of that. So I happened to Google low-level waste companies, and of course there's like these often asked questions listed underneath it on Google. And one of the questions, I'll just read some of these off. It says, what industries produce low-level waste? Well, some of this we already know, but it's worth mentioning again. It says low-level waste can be generated by any industry using radioactive material, including the government, not surprising there, utility, basically utility companies, manufacturers, medical and research facilities. I'm not surprised by any of that because we have discussed Superfund sites in times past. Then it says, what are examples of very low-level waste? Again, we've talked about some of this, but it says some examples include radioactively contaminated protective shoe coverings and clothing, cleaning rags, mops, filters, and reactor water treatment residues, equipment and tools, medical tubes, swabs, and hypodermic syringes, and carcasses and tissues from laboratory animals. Not surprising there. Let's see here. Dory answered that one. Let me see if it lists anything else that's kind of neat. So, let me see. Oh, this is interesting. It says, what is a zero-waste business? I've never heard of this before. A zero-waste zero-waste incorporates different aspects of waste management, chiefly waste reduction, but also reuse or reconditioning, as well as resource efficiency solutions. So that's very interesting there. Let's see here. It says, what industry wastes the most? So I guess someone using Google was very concerned about that. It says here construction, e-waste, organic, and plastics. I thought plastics would be right up there with construction. Now, here's the thing. Construction, what's interesting is that I would say they can produce the most waste, but they also recycle the most. That's the thing. So this is one of those things that, yes, they do probably produce the most waste in terms of their industry, but they also recycle the most. Whereas just everyday people like you and me, how often do we recycle? And how often do we have the opportunity to recycle? Like, as you know, you guys know that I'm stationed in Oklahoma City, at least right now. And so I know from living here, it's very difficult to recycle. It just is. It's hard to find a recycling bin. And if the city does offer to pick up your recyclables, they charge so much ridiculous money. It's insane. It's just ridiculous. Let me see here. I want to see what these other questions are. Oh, here's a good one. What is an example of a zero-waste industry? Learning something new here. It says, for example, many companies are now using paper and cardboard where they would have used plastic. Whereas a few years ago, that's what they were doing, relying on easily recyclable materials rather than complex multi-material designs with plastic. One thing I thought of is Fisher-Price. I'm not dogging Fisher-Price, but I've never really liked their toys because the plastic, it was just creepy. It smelled, and it made my skin smell whenever I would play with their toys as a child. So I typically would just try and play outside or use toys that were not plastic, which was very difficult even in the late 1980s. So that's always very interesting there. Let's see here. It says, how is low-level waste disposed of? It says, low-level waste is typically stored on site by licensees, either until it has decayed away and can be disposed of as ordinary trash, or until amounts are large enough for shipment at a low-level waste disposal site in containers approved by the Department of Transportation. Very interesting there. So that rings true, and I'll say that because every so often I will see waste trucks, but they look different than just regular trucks that pick up your trash. You know, here in Oklahoma, we have a couple of different interstates that run right through the middle. One is I-40 and the other one is I-35, and I think there's another one, but those are the top two. So we get tremendous amounts of traffic, not only because people travel a lot through the central part of the United States, but also because we have a lot of, I would say, semi-trucks that ship and just move product, whether it's new, used, or garbage, whatever the case may be. We see a lot of this stuff, so this is why our roads get used so much. Very interesting, so. So let's see here. The next question that someone Googled is, what are the four classifications of waste? It says here, municipal solid waste, industrial waste, agricultural waste, and hazardous waste. Not surprising there. It says here, oh, someone looked up, what is the difference between high-level waste and low-level waste? And it says there are two broad classifications, high-level or low-level waste. High-level waste is primarily spent fuel removed from reactors after producing electricity. Low-level waste comes from reactor operations and from medical, academic, industrial, and other commercial uses of radioactive materials. Not surprising there. Oh, this is an interesting question. It says, is low-level waste safe? It says, the radioactivity is measured using a scanning system. The drums are barcoded, and the radioactive content of each drum is entered into a database to ensure that the waste is safely, securely, and efficiently managed in compliance with the standards set by the IAEA and the Australian regulator, whatever they're called. I'm surprised that Australia would even really know about this stuff because I'm not always a fan of Australia. No offense, but they're socialist and they don't take care of their own. Very similar to the UK, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. A lot of these socialistic countries, oh, and Canada, they're pretty bad as well. It says, what states have no nuclear waste? It says, the Nevada test site was established in 1951 to test nuclear weapons, but the state currently has no spent nuclear fuel. Other states with zero waste, which includes North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Utah, Oklahoma, Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, Delaware, Rhode Island, Alaska, Hawaii, and Montana. Interesting there. Next question that someone looked up. What state holds the most nuclear waste? Let's see here. It says 3 out of every 4 states in the United States contain nuclear waste. And then someone wrote, uh-oh. So that's interesting. So the state that has the most nuclear waste is Illinois, followed by Pennsylvania, followed by South Carolina, and then New York. Very interesting. I'm surprised about Illinois. I'm very surprised. Let's see here. The next question is, well, we already know how they dispose of nuclear waste. Let's see. Oh, this is interesting. Someone asked, do zero waste shops make money? Interesting here. And so the answer is yes. Opening a zero waste store can make for a profitable business. However, like any other business, nothing is guaranteed. That is very true. Let's see here. Ooh, this question's interesting. What are the most wasteful companies? Someone really wanted to know. It says the top plastic polluting corporations of 2022. Number one, or this isn't necessarily in any particular order, but the first one is the Coca-Cola Company. Next one is PepsiCo, Nestle, Mondelez International. I'm not surprised by that. Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Mars Inc., and Philip Morris International. Very interesting there. And there was no specific order. It just had them listed. Let's see here. Well, someone asked, where do companies waste most money? I would think HR, but these people got a little more specific. It says 13 ways many business owners waste money. It says underutilizing purchased software. That's true. Maintaining extravagant office spaces. Overspending on staff for rapid product development. I agree with that. I think there's a lot of money that goes into IT departments that it's just a waste of money. Let's see here. Next one is not automating administrative tasks. That's true, but you're also putting people out of work. So people are better than machines. Next is employing ineffective management staff. Finally, someone says it, right? That's great. It says the last one is trying to manage marketing with insufficient resources. That's true. But also, me personally, I just pray about it. You know, I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but I can't remember if I've said this in a couple episodes or not before, but I have spent zero money on advertising. Absolutely zero. And yet my show is booming over in Europe and overseas. It's amazing. And it's also growing in Saudi Arabia, Kenya. And I'm looking at my map. I have a map on the wall, and I have tacks, thumbtacks, where my podcast has been heard. And you know what? There are way more tacks on my global map overseas than in the United States. So that's very interesting there. And that tells me that there are more people overseas that are longing for freedom than Americans. That's really scary. That is very scary. Very scary for sure. But the next question, and I'll close with this one. It says, which industry is the most toxic? Woo, that's a good one. It says multinational companies that mine metals, almost said minerals, but mine metals, such as gold, silver, and copper, produce more toxic waste than any other industry in the country, according to the EPA's annual toxics release inventory. That's very interesting. We need to look up that report. I've never heard of that report before. But, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, I've come across a couple companies. I cannot remember their name. I'm trying to think what it was. Sometimes these companies are kind of fly by night, but there's some companies that their goal is to get rich quick. And I think that's awesome goal, but you need to do it legally, professionally and ethically and morally. And unfortunately, when it comes to the metals business, mining for metals, if people mine here in the United States, it's very restricted. And sometimes for good reason. You know, there are safety measures that you need to take and you need to do things the right way. Well, what a lot of these companies do that are typically multinational, like they may say they have an HQ here or in Europe, but really the work is coming from like Africa somewhere, like in a totally different country where they're not heavily regulated and the labor is not protected, they're not safe, they're not always paid well. And it's very dangerous work. Like the kind of mining that takes place in Africa, like for example, diamond mines and things like that, it is excessively dangerous. It's ridiculously dangerous. It's just like, wow. But see, a lot of these workers that are miners, I don't mean like M-I-N-O-R-S, I mean M-I-N-E-R-S, like people that are actually doing the mining work, a lot of them are villagers. So number one, they don't know better. Number two, they probably can't read and write. Number three, their government doesn't want them to know that they should or could have workers' rights. And I say should or could because most African countries over there do not have workers' rights. And that's one reason why there's so many human rights violations that occur overseas as opposed to in the United States. But my point is this, there are some very evil, crooked people that exploit and use workers overseas, but yet they have headquarters here in the United States. And from my research, a lot of these companies are listed as holding companies, and they are located in the northeastern part of the United States, particularly in New Jersey, which is really interesting that New Jersey would have so many holding companies that are so corrupt and so evil, but yet they do business overseas, but yet they claim to be a quote-unquote American company, but the labor is, and the labor and the workers are not here, they're overseas. The only people that are here with these holding companies that are very corrupt are just the higher-up executives that are getting all the money. And again, I'm not against people making money. I think it's great to be rich and to do great things. But, you know, there's a difference between earning a living and leasing and fleecing. You know, two totally different things. I am all for capitalism and democracy because without those, you do not have an economy and you do not have freedoms, you do not have liberties. But here's the thing. There are so many people that they take capitalism and they distort it. And here's the thing. When you distort something, it's no longer its original form. So, yes, there are some people that they kind of piggyback on Wall Street and on capitalism, but they're not really capitalist. Because if you are a true, I would say, capitalist, or a true, I would say, I don't know, humanist, you know, and value human rights and workers' rights, then you would never jeopardize someone else's health or their labor or their pay. Because within capitalism, you want what is best for everybody. That doesn't mean that everybody is a millionaire and a billionaire, although that would be great, because, you know, your wages are dependent upon your success, and your success is dependent upon you and your actions. That's just how it is. So yes, you know, here in the United States, we do have equality and you have every opportunity to be rich, but just because you have the opportunity to be rich doesn't mean that you're going to be rich. And so sometimes capitalism gets a bad rap, not only because of stupid movies, but, and sometimes really bad people that end up going to jail. But here's the thing, capitalism, it is the most freeing thing for any society. But here's the thing. Within any free society, meaning you have more freedoms, you have liberty, here's the thing. You know, you are not immune from corruption. And here's the thing. The corruption that we have here in the United States is minuscule compared to other countries. Like the corruption that takes place in the Middle East, especially within their royal families and things like that, that don't ever pay taxes. It's just unbelievable, the corruption there. Then there is tremendous corruption in the countries in Africa, and then also in Jamaica, and also the Soviet Union, aka Russia, and also the Soviet bloc, which also includes the Ukraine and those countries there. These are not good, kind, sweet people. So, you know, there's a reason why no one is like the United States. It's because they are not the United States. They do not have our Constitution. And even if they claim to have our Constitution and practice democracy, they're not really doing it. Because they're not equating democracy and capitalism with liberty and freedom. So here's the thing. When you have democracy, you have capitalism. When you have capitalism, you have democracy. If you strip one away from the other, you can't have any of it. Most of these countries don't realize that because they have what is called a love of money, which is a pretty big sin. Money in of itself is not evil. It's the love of money that is evil. So just FYI, be aware of that, because it's, to me, it gets frustrating, excuse me, whenever I meet people that I can tell they have a problem with greed because they can't stand it when someone makes more money than them. I think it's great when someone makes more money than me, because I want to know, hey, what makes you successful? What did you do in your life, or what are you doing now that is bringing in this money? Like, are you a business owner? Did you invent something? I mean, did you go to school for like 10 or 12 years and become a neurosurgeon and invent some new procedure? Like, what's the scoop? I want to know why they are successful. I want to know how they did it. I want to know, like, what was their goal? What was driving them? Like, did they become what they wanted to become? Like, what they dreamed of, like, as a child? You know, here's the thing. A lot of rich people, they have become what they dreamed about as a child, and they took that leap of faith to become what they wanted to be. That takes a lot of courage, because that means day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year, they did not give up. How many people do you know that do not give up? Think about, like, just think about all the athletes that shoulda, coulda, woulda gone to the Olympics, but they didn't stick with their training. Some people just naturally suck at athleticism. So, of course, they're not going to make it. But I'm talking about those people that they could have made it to something, but they didn't. It's called character. So needless to say, some people have character building skills and some do not. And that is the difference, basically, between the rich and everybody else. Because I've said this in times past, the middle class, sometimes they're the biggest snobs, unfortunately. In my personal opinion, and I've seen this in my line of work many times, the middle class, they love what they have, but they want more. They want what the rich has, but they're not willing to work for it. They're not willing to sacrifice for it. Well, that's probably their biggest problem. Laziness, covetousness, jealousy, those things don't pay. They make you poor and they make you broke. So just FYI, be aware of that. But I will go ahead and end this podcast. But as usual, until next time, I pray that you're happy, healthy, and whole, that you have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. Thank you so much. God bless, and bye-bye.
Don't let this world go down without a fight. And I still hold a firm